Hello, I'm Eric Corman, CEO of League of Education Voters and the parent of a high school junior of the global majority in the public school system who is accessing special education services. I advocate because of my son, so that every Washington student can get what they need, when they need it, and how they need it. In this podcast, we interview students, policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create learning environments where every Washington student feels safe, supported, and a positive sense of belonging so that they can achieve academically and access the life they choose. Michelle Whitney is the 2026 Washington State Superintendent of the Year. She has served as superintendent of the Pasco School District since 2016, leading a district of more than 18,800 students and 2,250 employees in one of the most diverse and rapidly growing communities in Eastern Washington. Under her leadership, Pasco School District has implemented transformative initiatives that have expanded opportunity, strengthened community trust, and redefined what student-centered education looks like in Washington State. Michelle has focused her leadership on breaking down barriers to student success and fostering meaningful connections across the Pasco community. Under her guidance, the district has expanded equitable access to academic opportunities, strengthened communication and trust with families, and built lasting partnerships that support every school. Her collaborative and student-centered approach has created a culture where all students are valued, empowered, and equipped to thrive. Throughout her career, she has been an active and influential leader within the broader educational community. Michelle has served as president-elect, president, and past president of WASA, the Washington Association of School Administrators, as well as a governing board member for both WASA and the American Association of School Administrators, the AASA. Her voice has shaped professional learning statewide, emphasizing belonging, dignity, and inclusion in educational systems. Michelle's professionalism is reflected in her ability to lead through complex issues with empathy and transparency. Whether navigating curriculum discussions or equity initiatives, she consistently fosters unity and keeps the focus where it belongs, on students. A Pasco native and lifelong educator, Michelle began her career as a kindergarten teacher, fourth grade teacher, and school counselor before serving as assistant principal, principal, and multiple other district leadership roles. She holds bachelor's and master's degrees, as well as principal and superintendent certifications from Washington State University, and holds an associate degree from Columbia Basin College. Her leadership has earned her many honors, including recognition as a 2024 Woman of Distinction by Washington State University Tri-Cities and Columbia Basin College Alumna of the Year. As the state superintendent of the year, Michelle will be a candidate for the 2026 American Association of School Administrators National Superintendent of the Year Award. The national award will be announced in February during the AASA National Conference on Education in Nashville. Michelle, congratulations on being named Superintendent of the Year. Now, some of Pasco's transformative initiatives include dual language, highly capable, and the PEAK program, which I'm really curious to know about. What makes these programs special?
Well, Eric, first, thank you so much for the congratulations. I still get a little emotional every time someone congratulates me about the award. It's a pretty incredible honor to be acknowledged by your peers across the state for work that you've done in a community that you've loved your entire life. And that really is my story. So in Pasco, I think I want to amplify a bit of my own journey in public education because it's relevant to the question that you asked. So this is my 30th year in Pasco as an educator.
Wow.
My goal was to be an educator in Pasco. So when I went away to teacher school, my goal was to come home and be a teacher in Pasco. And then this is my 10th year as superintendent in Pasco School District. Those two things really underscore my leadership philosophy and really leadership kind of stance in our community is that I am here to be of service to this community and the families and the students within it. And so when we make changes like implementing or expanding and evolving dual language, or changing how we identified students for highly capable services, or implementing the PEAK program, they're really fundamentally grounded in the core values of this community. So I am a highly relational oriented leader. I spend a lot of time in the community in communication and collaboration with the community that I serve. I spend a lot of time with students and have very specific ways that we amplify student voice. So when we go to make changes, it's really about making changes in alignment to what those that we serve are asking us for. That's what makes them special. Is theaters are not initiatives I wanted, or they're not designed for me. They're designed by me in collaboration with leaders in our district for our community who asked me for them, in alignment with their core values. So, and it's a deep honor to serve our community that way. My grandfather was chief of police in Pasco. My great grandmother was a nurse here. And so I really feel like I was born into leadership in Pasco, and feel like I have a good connection to what it means to live here and what it means to grow up here and learn here and live here. And so it's just an honor and privilege to do the work on the behalf of the people who've asked me to do it for them.
Yeah, that process of co-design, that's special. What is the PEAK program, by the way?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that you asked. The PEAK partner is really a unique opportunity for businesses to partner with our school district. And it's about partnering to educate all kids. That's what PEAK stands for. So the business community, they volunteer to be a partner with a school. And each of our schools has multiple partners. That's how many local businesses are interested. There's a financial investment. So those businesses pay a few hundred dollars a year, and they give that money to the school. And that school then uses those dollars to support programs. Sometimes schools buy incentives for kids or books for kids, or they really do buy things for kids or support programs for kids with that money that sometimes is difficult because there's restrictions around the way that we can spend public dollars. Those dollars don't have any restrictions. And so, like, they can buy food with those dollars. They can buy really anything they want. And then that business also has to volunteer to host or partner or launch a certain number of events a year. All of our partners go well above what is required of them by the program. The businesses really have a sense of partnership and ownership of the school. And it's just this beautiful collaboration. It goes really well beyond collaboration to where it's almost kind of like they become part of the family. And it's really great to see how they deeply value being involved in that way. And like I said, every one of our schools, all 27 of our schools, have multiple partners. So they have 3 and 4 partners apiece. So that's how many local businesses want to be a part of it. And intuitively, you would know that Pasco businesses, of course, are going to support Pasco schools. We have businesses that are in Kennewick and Richland that also are PEAK partners, which I just think is so amazing that people that don't necessarily live in our community want to support our schools too. So it's really heartwarming to see that. And we have a few events a year where all of our PEAK partners come together. And it's so amazing to see, and very heartwarming as a superintendent to see how many business and industry partners show up to support our kids in our buildings.
That's amazing, creating a community like that. Yeah. How did you do that? Like, if I was a superintendent in another district and I was listening to you, I think, okay, this sounds great, but could I do it in my own community?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. And I also have to give credit where credit's due. So this was not necessarily my program. It was in place before I got here. And it actually was emulated after a program somewhere else, like we often do in education. We see things other places, and then we take that idea and tailor it to us. When I came in as superintendent, we made some changes to the way the existing program was working. But I would say to any new superintendent who's thinking about doing it, you contact a superintendent who's already doing it and ask, what are the potential pitfalls? Like, what went well, what didn't? We start, like, when we're looking for new partners every year, we just push social media and use our networks and contact to find out which businesses are interested. And I think there's nothing better than word of mouth recommendations and getting that out through businesses too, by contacting your local organizations in your community that support your businesses, like your Chamber of Commerce and TriDeck and those kinds of places, to get the word out that you're looking for partners. I would love to believe this is unique to Pasco. Of course, I always think Pasco is best at it, but I think people in communities are hungry to support schools, and they're really looking for ways to do that. If I was a superintendent, I'd be reaching out to school districts that are already doing something like it and taking the very best of what those school districts are doing, and then making sure that you're also flavoring it so that your community sees value in it. Our peak partners also get some special access to events where they can, for example, at the beginning of the year, we have a big benefits fair. Our peak partners get tables at those benefits fairs to give out information about their businesses in ways that other people don't. And they get some advertising and some things like that. So that's the other thing to think about is not only are we benefiting from that relationship, but what would your local businesses see as a benefit as well? Now, most businesses will tell you that the reason they're doing it is the partnership and they want to give. And the things that they get, the little bit of advertisement and access to be able to hand out advertisements to our employees about their businesses is probably not their main incentive, but it's a nice thing that we can offer as just a token of our appreciation for what they do for our district.
Good to know about the local angle. Going back to dual language and highly capable, what does that look like in Pasco compared to other districts?
You know, many districts have dual language programs. Every district has some kind of highly capable program. What's unique in Pasco is 56% of our kids come to us already speaking another language other than English. So we have this phenomenal opportunity to really harness that asset and amplify language as an asset for all kids. What's different for us in Pasco because of the language benefits already is we can offer the opportunity for any child, regardless of their home language. So whether you're a Spanish-speaking family at home or an English-speaking family at home, you can start the journey to be bilingual in kindergarten. So that's different. I think a lot of districts have dual language programs for kids who are coming, speaking Spanish and learning English. We're doing that, and we're also offering the opportunity for parents, like families that are English speaking only, for their children to be learning Spanish alongside our students who are learning Spanish, learning English. Any student in Pasco who wants to start the journey to be bilingual, they can start that journey in kindergarten at the school closest to where they live. That's the other thing that's different in Pasco, because again, 56% of our kids already know another language. That cross cuts our community and allows us then to have that school in your neighborhood. Your child can continue to go to that school and have that. Literally every single one of our elementary schools has a dual language strand, at least one, if not more, whether it's one way or two way. So that's different in our district. And it's really about the language benefits in our community. And it was unanimously supported by our board of directors at the time to expand it that way. That tells you that isn't a group of people or a demographic of people that is valuing the benefit of bilingualism, that it really is a cross-cutting value in our community. Our community demographics allows us to offer a unique opportunity, but it also is about a value. It's about the community as a whole valuing bilingualism. And I think that's a pretty amazing thing to witness as a superintendent. And there's nothing more heartwarming in my mind as when you walk into a dual language classroom and you have a student who comes from a Spanish-speaking home and a student come from an English-speaking home working together to help each other learn each other's language. So then there's this like deep kind of sense of what's called social cultural competence, where we just have a different worldview and perspective about how to be together in community when we've had that experience starting in kindergarten. So pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah. Well, and you have something else that's unique when it comes to dual language, which is a bilingual math program, a bilingual advanced math program. And I mean, granted, we talked to Gabriella Whitemars, the 2026 State Teacher of the Year, about that, but I don't know of any other district that has that.
We're kind of a big deal, Eric, I have to say. I know I'm biased, but... Yeah, no. And again, it's about embracing the assets of the people that we serve and amplifying those so that there is equitable access for those kids for college credits that they wouldn't all otherwise be able to get while they're learning the language. So incredibly proud of Gabriella, and it is absolutely the right work for the students at Pasco. So super proud of her and super proud of the program, and ultimately really proud of the kids in that program. Those kids work really hard. They're absolutely incredible when you go in their classroom to watch them learn, to watch Gabriella teach, but also watch those students learn is pretty incredible.
Yeah. I want to stay on equity for a minute
Sure.
because with highly capable programs, there have been concerns statewide and even beyond about just whether or not a highly capable program can be equitable. How do you do equity in your high cap program?
Yeah, no, I am very proud of the changes that we've made to identification for students for the highly capable program. And really, the key tenet for us that was the big change is universal screening. So we screen every student where traditionally or typically or before or whatever the right words are, highly capable programs were often, it was like a recommendation based, or parents could recommend their own kids or teachers recommended kids and then they were tested. And that leaves a lot up to variability and like who knew about it, who has agency and access, who there's kids who were potentially highly capable who were never even getting recommended for testing. And so we just removed that barrier completely. And so we're just going to test all kids. It really opened the door to changing equity and access for students. And it was a significant change in the faces in our highly capable programs. And that particular initiative was deeply personal to me. You know, I come from a super complicated family system. You know, I didn't read very well till fourth grade. I probably didn't do math very well till college. And it wasn't because I wasn't smart. It's because no one was reading to me for 30 minutes a day at night. And so it was deeply personal to me that we put in systems that make sure that we're giving students that are not traditionally or typically identified the chance to show how smart we really are too. You know, it isn't about who has the network and know-how to access the system to get in the right place, but it's really about how do we build systems that ensure that we're mining for talent versus waiting for talent to appear. Because, and I heard a really profound quote at a diversity, equity, and inclusion conference, and it said that aptitude is equitably distributed across a community, but opportunity is not. That was profound for me. It was a really a pivotal leadership moment for me to say, okay, what systems do we have in our district that are barriers to identifying that aptitude that really cross-cuts a community? So I'm very proud of the work of our people that were in charge of the highly capable changes that we made. You know, that was done in deep partnership with our community. And I talked to a lot of parents. And it isn't only about making changes, it's about making changes in a way that gets you the outcomes that you were looking for. And so I'm very proud of that and proud of the changes that were made so that we were opening doors for more kids and not just more kids, but an array of students who might otherwise not have been identified.
What does it look like in terms of implementation? Is it pull out? Is it push in? Because highly capable programming can be done in various ways.
Yeah, and we have a mixture of both in our district, depending on kind of where kids score. We do have some school-based programs. So our Spectrum programs are school-based. And so, you know, if you were a student who, for example, doesn't live within the Livingston boundaries, but you were invited to that program, you're going to get transported out of your neighborhood school to that program. Some students qualify based on their scores for that kind of a program. And some families, even if their students qualify, that isn't what they choose because they want their children to stay at their neighborhood school. Other kids, because of their test scores or because of parent choice, they choose to stay at their neighborhood school. And we serve those students in what's called cluster grouping. So they're grouped within classrooms. Teachers know who they are. And then teachers receive training to differentiate for those students within the classroom. So we have a centralized school-based program, and then students are served within the classroom otherwise. So those are really the two programs that we offer.
Thanks for clarifying.
Of course.
Now, speaking of programming, career technical education programs can be a great example of student-centered education. What are some exemplar CTE programs in Pasco School District?
This is another area for us that I'm very proud of. Our CTE director is actually the CTE director of the year as well under her professional organization. And we've been very thoughtful and intentional about the way that we've designed our CTE programming, one, by what we're offering with deep partnerships with industry programs. CTE by model requires that you have advisory groups for each of your programming. But again, in Pasco, we're not about compliance. Yes, you have to have these groups, but we're not doing that just to check off and say we have the groups. We're doing it because the intention of having those groups is to ensure that what you're offering in alignment with industry standard and is what is needed in your community, right? So we really embrace what's the spirit of the requirement to have these groups. It's not just about having them, but it's about having the right people and really maximizing the impact of having the advisory group. So Laura Jones, she oversees our CT programs, is phenomenal at getting the right partners at the table to ensure that we're offering the industry standards in our offerings and our CTE programs. So all of our schools have a battery of CTE offerings that are the same. For example, every school has a floriculture program or a school credit union program. But then each of the schools has what we call a signature program. So Pasco High has like a law and justice program that supports kids that are looking at law enforcement or going into maybe be a lawyer or maybe even an elected official. They also have an automotive program there, really because Pasco High was built with an auto shop. In today's world, we cannot afford to build a new auto shop. So Pasco High has the auto shop, and students from all of our schools that are interested in auto shop can go to Pasco High. But the cool part isn't just having the auto shop. It's that the auto shop is aligned to what do the current auto industry needs our kids to know. So for example, I was just over there. They have a wheel balancing machine that's all computerized. And it is the wheel balancing machine that our students would use if they got a job in one of our local garages. Or the lifts that are in there are the industry standards. So the kids are learning the technology, or like the computerized diagnostic system is in alignment with industry standard. And then our local Corwood Ford, they partner with us so that our kids can go through that automotive program and they can be employed at Corwin Ford. And right. That's really what we're trying to stretch all of our CTE programs is it's not just about the pathway in the high school, but pathway in our high school, maybe even some dual credits with our local colleges or industry credentialing programs into a high demand, high paying job. And whether that job then becomes the career choice for that student in the short term, medium term, or long term, or a short term while they then go to college later on, or even if it's a placeholder while they're getting ready to go to college, that's really our goal. Is it isn't just about the coursework within the four walls of the high school, but it's how is it leading them into a high demand, high paying job. Corwin Ford is one of our partners. RDO is a partner for our ag signature program at Sageview. And then one of our newest offerings in CTE is our Orion High School. Our working title for that when we were designing it was our Career and College Academy. It's a choice high school for our students interested in pathways in human and health services and engineering manufacturing. It's a school of choice, so kids choose to go there. So there's kids from all of our local boundary areas. We had over 200 kids. I think it was actually closer to 300 kids apply to go to the school, and the school had about 150 spots for new freshmen. So we knew based on our interest at Delta High School that we had kids that were interested in a smaller kind of pathway-based experience. We get upwards of 150, 200 applicants at Delta for 33 spots. So we knew that we had interest, but we were thrilled to see how many kids were really interested in starting as freshmen at Orion High School. So that we're very excited about. And again, Orion is really about offering those pathways under the big umbrellas of healthcare, engineering, manufacturing, but on a continuum of, again, kids could go through a pathway, for example, in partnership with CBC, get a certificate to be a phlebotomist and go right into the world of work, making, you know, whatever phlebotomists make an hour, $50 an hour, you know, with benefits and a potential retirement plan, or they could go to a two-year, four-year university and become a physical therapy assistant or even a physical therapist and on to be whatever it is that they want to do. So it's really about, again, designing experiences for kids that launch them into whatever the next step is for them based on their experience, not our experience. I think that's what's most important to me is that we're designing futures for students that they choose, not that we're choosing for them.
Well, and it also sounds like you're not doing college or career. You're doing college and career.
That's right. That's right. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. And, you know, if you think about it, I mean, I came out of college. I was 22 years old when I got hired in my career, and I made a phenomenal choice. And I've never looked back, and I've been extraordinarily happy, probably an anomaly. You know, at 22 years old, I might have got lucky. Like, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I actually had a great counselor at CBC who helped me But, you know, 22 is pretty young to be making decisions for the rest of your life. And so, you know, having this continuum of offerings and some flexibility along that continuum makes a lot of sense for our kids now. And we didn't think this up for them. We co-designed them with them. So when we envisioned Orion, I had my superintendent advisory council and I said, okay, you tell me what's worked about Delta. You tell me what's worked about your CTE programs. What should we be doing differently at Orion that we're not currently doing? And our kids are insightful and they're profoundly wise and they will tell you exactly where you're getting it right. And they are not at all worried about speaking truth to power. They will tell me exactly where I'm getting it wrong in a super kind and loving way. They'll absolutely tell me where I'm getting it wrong. And they're right. It's just an honor to make changes on their behalf. And then you see this increased engagement. I had a student, I was walking through Orion High School, and this young man, ninth grade boy, stopped me and said, Miss, I just wanted to thank you for making this school for us.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's of course, like any good superintendent, I totally cried in the hallway after. But I mean, you know, you're getting it right when a ninth grade boy will stop you and tell you, thank you, you know, thank you for school for us. So.
Yeah, that is beautiful.
It is. I have the best job ever.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
I do.
Well, you talked about yourself a little bit. I just wanted to expand on that a little. In your own education journey, what worked for you and what didn't work so well? You mentioned that people didn't read to you when you were growing up. You mentioned that you had a great counselor when you had CVC, but I'd love to learn more about your own personal journey.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah. Like I said, I come from a very complicated family system. You know, I think statistically, kids like me don't end up as CEOs of organizations with $340 million budget. This just isn't where we end up. Unless we have people outside of our family system investing in helping us break the cycle of circumstances we come from. And it isn't that my parents didn't love me. My parents loved me and they gave me the very best they had. And they had a very deep commitment to the idea that I would go to college because for them, that was the thing that was going to be the difference maker. And that's kind of where their network and know-how stopped. They knew how to like have a deep dream and love for their daughter, but they didn't have, you know, network like, hey, I have a friend that's going to get you an internship at this place for your summer job. So that's really where public education had to step in and bridge that gap for me between the kind of circumstances I came from and the reality I wanted to live for the rest of my life. And I am a product of public education that did not stop at 12th grade. I then went to community college and state college. And then have a career in education where there are same teachers who invested in me as a kid, not same, exact same, but in philosophy same, are now investing in you as a young professional. So I think that sometimes the piece we don't always talk about is how teachers are not only teaching the kids in their class, but how as colleagues, veteran teachers are investing in the next generation of veteran teachers. And it is from veteran teachers that I learned about, you know, how do you navigate educating students in our community? And I think what's different now about public education than like when I went to school is back then there was a model and a lesson. And if you got the way that people were doing things, then you did pretty well. But if you didn't, you just didn't.
Yeah.
We don't do it that way anymore. You know, I think I look at the experience our kids are having in Pasco School District and think, how I would have thrived in the environments in our classrooms, because kids are known by name, strength, and needs. Someone would have known that someone didn't read to her before kindergarten. Someone would have known the struggles, like, and we would do something about that. And it was no one's fault back then. It just wasn't the way public education was done. You know, I'm 52 years old. It was a long time ago that I was in school. And so the system has evolved to be more student-centered and more whole child centered and more differentiated. And I think those are the things that would have worked better for me than what happened. And again, I'm not being critical. It just is the evolution, right? Then and systems should evolve. I was a young professional and I remember this vividly, having figured out a real complex master schedule. And I did it with magnets on a whiteboard. And the principal at the time came in and said, man, this work is genius. And I remember him leaving thinking, like, I thought I was stupid because I had to do it with the magnets. You know, I couldn't figure it out just on a piece of paper. Like, I had to get the magnets out. I was old. I was probably, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s. And I was like, he thinks I'm smart. And I guess I tell that story to say the evolution or the investment of public education did not stop for me when I got my high school diploma. The entity of education has continued to invest in me, and I've learned a lot from veteran teachers, from administrators when I was a new administrator. And I learn every day in this job how to do a better job on behalf of people I serve from the people I serve. I just think we have a phenomenal opportunity as people who choose the field of education, whether you're a teacher in a classroom or an administrator or a paraprofessional or whatever your role is within education. I view us as teachers. And I think we have just this phenomenal opportunity to not only influence lives, but be influenced by lives. That's pretty extraordinary.
Absolutely. Well, if you were in charge of our state's education system and there were no budgetary constraints, what would you do?
Yeah, you know, I knew you were going to ask this question, Eric, and so I had some time to think about it. I think for me, it's really about the bureaucracy and the barriers that are in some ways, I'm going to say self-imposed, that get in the way of doing the real work. For me, it would really truly be about, in a real way, centering student voice and amplifying the voices of community across Washington State to truly be co-designers in the experiences for their kids and for kids for kids and parents for their kids. The way the system is currently structured, there is a tension there in that, especially for leaders like me who really value student voice and parent voice, is really listening to what people are asking me for and then having to go push that up against a set of policies and compliance and try to get as close to what they're asking me for as I absolutely can. And it almost sometimes feels like you're having to fight the system to get that done. I wish that was easier. It's not about me creating a system that works for me. It's about me creating a system that works for the people that I serve. And I wish that the policies and the structure, the compliance made that easier. It sometimes feels like you're having to fight that to get that work done. So that's what I would change. I would make that part easier.
Michelle Whitney is the 2026 Washington State Superintendent of the Year. She has been superintendent of the Pasco School District for the last 10 years. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It was an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to learn more about League of Education Voters or support our work, please visit our website, educationvoters.org.